Well, good afternoon, everybody. I would like to, first of all, thank the organizers for giving me the opportunity to talk about the most important curve of soil physics. That's an honor. Well, despite the title you see here, I'm actually convinced that the relation between water content and the potential free energy of water is at least one of the most important relations in soil physics. Actually, when I asked to submit a title, I was reading a manuscript from Philippe Avey, who I like to see here in the auditorium, and I found this. It was not on this curve, but on geophysics, but this was also part of his title, and I was convinced about of this, and thought I can change the title afterwards, but as time flies, it was too late to change, so we go with that. But it has a reason, this title, and the reason are these red dots, and these are actually measurements of two instruments, TDR probe and tensiometer, installed in one depth in an undisturbed soil, and what you see here are the measurements which were recorded over a period of a few months. And here is the water content, and here is the water potential. And, well, here is the most important curve of soil physics. And, of course, we can debate, is it obvious where this curve should be? And, I think we should extend this concept of this single curve, and I'm pretty sure that the most of you will agree on that, to come up with, let's say, a probability space of the hydraulic state defined by water content and water potential. And this is an area more than a curve. And this is confirmed by the measurements we get in the field. And these red dots, this is not an exception. So we have plenty of lysimeters installed now in Germany in one project, 130, and we have these measurements everywhere, and we observe this all the time. It's getting better when we go deeper into the soil, but as we come close to the soil surface where we have the external excitation from the surface, we always find this this type of non-uniqueness. Okay. Well, I would like to make this suggestion of a probability space following these three questions. First, do we need to invest more in methods to determine hydraulic properties more exactly? This is part of the description of this session, actually, this question. The second one, I partly answered it already. Second, what do we learn from a state-of-the-art method? And third, where should we invest in future? What do we learn from that, and where should we invest in future? Okay, so let's jump on the first question. I already talked quite a bit about it, but I will go back, would like to go back to historical experiments which were absolutely great from Vachon and co-authors in the early 17th. They have different equipment as we have today, but they were able to measure rather precisely water content and water potential during what you see here, during water redistribution after an infiltration along a vertical column, which is somewhere installed here, and each of the points here has a different starting point for re-equilibration, and you can nicely see that you cover quite a large space here by all these data, and there is no single unique curve. And there, of course, there is hysteresis. We all know that, but it should be mentioned quite often because in typical modeling work we are seeing in the literature today, hysteresis is mentioned in the introduction, but then you cannot find it anymore in the rest of the paper. So we need to be aware about this. The second aspect, also already studied by Vachon, is the hydraulic non-equilibrium. That tells us during drainage, even if you start at the same initial point, it depends on the gradient in matrix potential on which curve you are going down with your water content. And this is what we term hydraulic non-equilibrium. And this is another aspect why this uni curve more or less does not exist. So the answer to the first question is probably no. So what do we learn from a state-of-the-art method? And this is the equipment we are using in our lab, which is pretty elaborated. There is somewhere is a soil in the middle, but we can, everything is nicely computer controlled. We can control the flux at the upper boundary. We can control the pressure at the lower boundary. We can measure outflow matrix potential and the concentration at the lower boundary with very high precision and very high temporal resolution, and this provides us the technical technical to study the hydraulic properties. Okay. So a classical experiment we are doing with this device is multi-step outflow to measure the water retention characteristic. That is, we desorb or we drain the sample according to a certain protocol of pressure steps at the lower boundary, and we measure the outflow of water and the backflow of water as a response to this to these pressure steps. And what you see here is not an exceptional good example. It does not fit very good, but approximately. And well, since this single curve do not exist as we think, that might be not that important. But we are allowed to look very closely on this type of of results, as you can see here. The model, which is the green curve, okay? So we should change the colors here. So the Richards model is the green curve. The measured data are the blue data points. And we regularly see that we have a fast reaction, some fast outflow followed by a slow equilibration phase, which is not captured by Richards equation, since if the water potential does not change, also the water content should not change. This is part of the concept. And this is another manifestation of some hydraulic non-equilibrium going on. I will come back to this later. But anyway, we get a set of hydraulic functions, water retention characteristics, including hysteresis, and the hydraulic conductivity function, which, of course, need to be understood as an optimal description of exactly this protocol of pressure steps which we applied in the experiment. And we need to be aware that in reality this could be different. So it's a description of our experiment in this case. So we should do more experiments to cover the state space a bit more complete. So I would like to present you another type of experiment which was done exactly with the same device without moving the sample. Now we apply a flux condition on top of the sample, and we let water content and water potential move freely in response to this flux. And of course the question is, what are we doing with the pressure control down here? And the idea was that we connect this pressure to the pressure reading at the tensiometer on top of the sample. So we adjust the pressure here to the readings up here such that also the water potential in the column adapts freely to the flux. And this is an interesting experiment since and it's somehow new in soil physics, where we are typically used to control our experiments by pressure through some ceramic plates. And this experiment is purely flux controlled, and water content and water potential can adapt. This is more actually as a natural soil is doing in response to precipitation. So, and if we do that, then so the potential here and down here is the same. So what I showed here is the starting from hydrostatic equilibrium and infiltration front. And if we do not control the pressure, if we leave the water dropping out here, then we have a potential of zero here, And with this trick here, we force the potential to the same value as here, and with that we force the system as fast as possible into gravity flow condition. Meaning we have no gradient in matrix potential, and the only gradient is gravity, and the hydraulic conductivity for this potential here is exactly the flow rate which we apply on top. And, well, we can, and with that we get one point on the hydraulic conductivity curve. We reduce the flow, we get the second point. We make another flux step, we get the third point. We increase the flow again, and we can even measure the hydraulic conductivity function, including hysteresis. So this was the idea of this experiment. Okay. We checked with Richard's equation if everything is fine during such a flux step. I don't want to go into details about this and jump immediately to the results. So this is the water content and the water potential at these three different locations, at these three different tensiometers, after a flux step from 1.5 to 1 centimeter per hour. And, well, this was the first experiment we did, and we were pretty happy seeing these three potentials being exactly on one line and approaching and what we would interpret as an equilibrium, such that we have a flow rate of 1 centimeter per hour at a potential of minus 41 something, and the first point on the hydraulic conductivity curve. Then we went to lunch. The experiment was running. So here we have only 1,400 seconds. And, well, seems to work fine. And after 30,000 seconds, so it was a long lunch, but but it was actually we were, I don't really remember, excited or frustrated when we came back, but after a very long time, the potential is still moving, going upwards, the water content is going downwards. This is completely forbidden when we follow our today's theory. Water content is reducing and the water potential is increasing. This is not allowed. Yeah, but we measure it and we trust our measurements. So then we did more flux steps to see if this is happening more often. And actually, for the subsequent flux steps, we observe exactly the same. And this type of strange behavior is reduced when the water content is decreased. And if we increase the flux steps, we see the same, not very pronounced here, but in the other direction. So the water potential, if we increase the flow, jumps upwards and then comes slowly back again to approach a new equilibrium. And what we first thought is a problem for our measurements, it came out to be really an interesting thing to follow the system through this state space of water content and water potential. And if we plot this trajectory of measured water content and potential of this flux step experiment on top of the results of the multi-step outflow, it's nicely consistent. So this is what is happening after each flux step. We have a fast adaption of the system and then a slow equilibration. And the next flux step, again, fast adaption and then slow equilibration. And interestingly, this is more pronounced during drainage on this branch compared to the imbibition branch where we observe much less non-equilibrium. But with this experiment, we explore more states, hydraulic states during transient situations. Okay, and the same is true for the hydraulic conductivity function. So both experiments are pretty much consistent, except that we, with the flux step, we see much more of this non-equilibrium because both state variables are freely moving. So what do we learn from that? Starting from, let's say these are static hydraulic properties. Let's assume for a moment they exist. And we start from a relatively dry state and we impose a certain flux then we force the system to bring this flux through the porous medium, and the system adapts in changing the flow rate. In changing the phase distribution at the pore space. That means the water content increases a little bit and brings the system somewhere down here, and the hydraulic conductivity need to be at this level. And there is an infinite number of small-scale phase distributions which are capable to conduct this flow. And there is one which is reached rapidly. And this is what these two points are describing. This can be reached rapidly. And then there is a slow process towards the energetic minimum. So this is what we observed during this equilibration phase, where the water content is actually increasing and the water potential is decreasing. So we can explain this phenomena, and we have with this experiment an access to this hydraulic non-equilibrium. Okay, so phase distribution depends on the forcing and on the time, and one ingredient is missing, and this is what I would like to talk about in the rest of the talk, where to invest in future. All the phenomena we are observing here, they depend on the subscale structure of the material. So if we would have a parallel bundle of capillary tubes, we would not observe any of these non-equilibrium processes. So this is a too simple model. So we have a complex structure, and actually we can measure this structure. We can observe this structure with our new techniques, especially X-ray tomography, where you can see here the pore space inside an aggregate. And we can even distinguish between the phases at the pore space, and I would make this example based on a sand, because this monoscale porous media is much easier to handle and to demonstrate what's going on. So we have here black the air, and gray is the water, and the light gray are the grains. And this is a measurement of a 3D sample, and you see a 2D cut. And we see some equilibrium state where the curvature between water and air is everywhere the same. Okay, and this can be easily quantified. So this is a dream of a histogram for anybody doing image analyzing. We have three nice separated peaks. If we do some filtering, they are even more separated. So it's pretty easy to get a three-phase picture in a quantitative way. Well, but this is not possible for many different water contents, for multi-scale structures, so we need to ask, what do we do if we only know the structure, not the water? And already with the structure, we can do interesting things. So this is just pore and solid, and we can apply our basic physics, which in this case is Young-Laplace equation, to estimate at which water potential, which part of the pore space is water-filled. So if you think about this one as a pore size distribution at the water potential psi 1, this part of the pore is water-filled. Here we have the interface. And with this concept, we can analyze this more complex structure, and we can ask in what part of the pore space do these spheres of different size can be placed inside, and this gives us an estimation of the local pore size, which is filled at a certain water potential by water or air. So this is in color code the size of the maximum ball which fits into the pore space. And based on that, we can of course calculate some sort of water retention characteristic. So this is the slow blue is the water, red is the air, and you see here the saturation of the sample. If we do not consider any connectivity issues, so each pore can be filled by water if it's large enough. Okay, but we know this is not really the case. And from this simulation, we come up with a water retention curve, which I termed here energetic minimum, which is the phase distribution which we would expect if we would have a parallel capillary bundle model. But of course, given the structure here, we can also simulate what will happen if water is trapped by narrow pore necks and drainage is prevented by narrow pore necks during the drainage process, or we can simulate imbibition where air is entrapped in larger pores and has no connectivity to escape to the outside. So this is again the energetic minimum curve, the black curve. And now to the right, maybe we can stop this, which is disturbing. No, I can't. Doesn't matter. If you look at this one, it stays blue for quite some time. When the water content does not change here, as soon as the air entry point is reached and we follow this, let's say, main drainage curve. For the imbibition, where we start at the dry end, and at some point we get air entrapped, and it's quite a lot for this type of granular media. So, based on the structure alone, we can estimate the extremes of the water retention characteristic, and this we can compare now to the measured water distribution here. So this is the image from before, and the gray stuff is real water. And from the curvature radius here between water and air, we can derive the water potential, which is assumed to be in equilibrium. And here you see the three stages on the three different curves, which correspond to the same water potential. And as you see, none of the three images corresponds exactly to this. But as we remember, we have from the first experiments, we have this slow processes towards equilibrium, and we never know exactly where we are. And it would be interesting to learn more about the processes which act at the pore scale to establish this new equilibrium stages. And this is why, and this is the last part of the presentation now, why we probably need to look more at the pore scale processes. And a good idea to do that is using such micro models, where we can actually, where the pore space is etched into a silicon wafer and covered by glass, and we can study flow processes and redistribution processes directly at the pore scale. The problem is that we have a 2D model here, a quasi 2D model, and of course we are interested in the 3D processes, and this is why we thought, how can we produce a 2D micro model which represents the property of a sand pack? And this was an interesting exercise. So we took the original, so this is a sphere pack actually, not sand, but we measured the properties which we would like to project onto the 3D model. And this is porosity, obviously. The pore size distribution, which was in this case quantified by the chord size distribution. Chord size distribution is just draw lines in different direction and measure the length segments which fall into the pore space, and this gives you a length distribution representing the size distribution of the pores. This is how it was done here. And we need to represent the topology of the system. And of course, you know that 3D topology, 3D connectivity is different than 2D connectivity. And what we did here is we assumed that the pore space should be one single cluster, as it is in 3D. So we would not like to have isolated pores in our 2D model, which would not make much sense. And then we applied a simulated annealing code, starting from a random distribution of pore and solid, and switched the pixels randomly to approach slowly in a global optimization procedure these properties. And then we came up with this structure here, which is a 2D projection of a 3D sand. So, well, it looks different than this one, but it has the same size distribution of pores, and the pores are connected, and should produce similar phenomenology as we observe in 3D. This is actually a funny structure. But this is just in the beginning, this work, and we did the first experiments of imbibition and drainage. I'm immediately done. And what you see here is the secondary drainage, so dark. I hope the contrast is sufficient. So the dark stuff here is water, and you see entrapped gas at some locations. It's just the result of the primary imbibition. And what is interesting here, maybe I need to accelerate a little bit. So it's of course not a continuous process. So the the drainage is stepwise. Avalanches of local drainage processes, but what's the most interesting here is that far behind the drainage front, for example, look at this one. This will disappear at some point. Also here, far behind the drainage front, the water is still connected through water films, and slowly, look at this. Slowly, this is removed. So for the drainage process, this is what we learned from that, is that behind the front, the local configuration of water clusters is driven towards unstable situations. And this is different for imbibition. And this one is now the imbibition, where, and I accelerate a little bit, where water is entrapped down here, it stays entrapped because during the imbibition process, the entrapped gas phase is stabilized. It's not instabilized compared to drainage, it's stabilized. And this explains the behavior I showed you before for the non-equilibrium for drainage, which is much more pronounced than the non-equilibrium during imbibition. And this is the qualitative explanation. Okay. So I'm running out of time, so I come to the conclusion. So we had the answer to the first question already. Probably we need not to determine van genoegten n and alpha to three digits behind the comma. We learned from the actual experiments that the phase distribution depends on the material structure and, of course, the external forcing and time. And all these ingredients is what we can observe, we can measure. And this is why we need, or I would like to invest in future to derive the dynamics at the pore scale, the phase distribution, from the structural properties independence of the external forcings. With that, I would like to thank the colleagues who contributed to this work, Uli Weller, Max Köhne, and Samuel Kumahor, who did the experiments, Steffen Schlüter, who is our expert in image analysis, and Helmut Geislinger and Sajjad Mohammadian, who are doing the work on the micromodels. And you, I thank you for your attention, and I'm ready for further questions.